Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
At the age of five, there was only two professions I was interested in. They were acting and inventing. And I was recently reflecting on this with someone this weekend, actually. And it seems to be like they're both about creating, aren't they? So I assume that's where I was at the age of five. But I can't be sure what I was thinking. But just to make the assumption, it's about creating. So maybe that's always been the interest. And as a child, I predominantly watched comedy, so comedic films and such. So the interest in comedy must have been through just the sheer amount that I kept watching. So that's where that comes from, I suppose.
What kind of comedy were you like watching?
I can't remember extremely early, but I like sure. Lauren Hardy. I like Charlie Chaplin. I love clown. I love slapstick. I love physicality. So they must be the keen things. And one of my favourite early theatre productions I went to see is Noises Off, which is really, really lovely. So clearly I love farce as well. And if you in the U, well, actually, all over the world. There's a theatre company at the moment that's gone quite, well, they've gone slapstick, farcical, which is The Play That Goes Wrong, which is Mischief Theatre. They are a bunch of improvisers from the UK, and they talk about Lambda, and they created this wonderful piece, and now it's gone global. I'm not sure if you know of that production or any of the others that they got going, but they're really, really good with what they do. They've been what am I thinking? They won the BBC for Christmas last year, and yeah, they've got three productions on the West End. One's on Broadway, and it's toured around the UK. It's touring around the world, I think.
Is it improv?
No, they scripted it, but my point is how wonderful improvisers are becoming rather famous with being able to write something down. Obviously, that happens sure. around the world as well, but this is quite wonderful when you think about how successful that is to have all those productions all around the world. It's just really great. Yeah. And the... It's not like their process is extremely based in improv, because from what they say, they can spend hours on 3 minutes of material.
So. Sure. I think that sometimes I worry about... I used to do, like, straight theater, like, plays and stuff like that. And whenever I think about the idea of scripts now, you know, because occasionally I'll work on a play, but, like, scripts seem so heavy, like an albatross. They're, like the words, like, even just the idea of what you just said, like, they spent 3 hours on, like, you know, three lines of text. Like, what? You know, God, that's so much. And that's because they're obsessed with this one detail of the performance or whatever, and they like super get into it. Whereas I don't know, now that I have done improv and been part of creating, you know, sketch comedy and improv comedy, there's something freer about it. And I know that to say sketch comedy is not written down, it is totally written down, but let's be honest, when performed by improvisers, they're not really saying the words you wrote. So, you know, you gotta be cool with all that, you know? And you gotta be cool with the essence of the joke. So, man, it's so interesting. Like, just made me think of the difference between, you know, scripted theater and improv being like that the words can sometimes get in the way.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. And as it's the same, because obviously constructing rather physical moments, so it's the same. They're looking at that precise specific moment in time, no matter if it's word or physicality. It's yeah, they're they're very heads on with making sure it's exactly what it needs to be. But, well, I guess some of that aspect is health and safety. No one wants to die doing some extreme physical collapse
totally.
From God knows how high up.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I love a good play with some high production value, and that takes time. I know that, you know, like, I love it when there's a full dance scene and everybody's totally on point, or like, there's something surprising that just appears out of somewhere. Love it, love it, love it. And I know that requires so much work, because for years I worked in the backstage, so I'm like, oh man, there are 12 guys getting that guy out of that window up there, or whatever, you know, like. And it's something funny just occurred to me, you know, just the idea of the freedom of improv, the like beauty, the bounciness, the fact that it's like, it's here, it's gone. Like, I don't know. That's one of the reasons why I really like it. That's what made me think when you mentioned the acting and the inventing together, because there's something about an inventor. An inventor is the kind of person who commits to trying, but knows that a lot of the time what he does is not going to be exactly what he wants. Like, when you go in, you know that that's what you're doing. And I just think that that's a really interesting, like, amalgam to improv as well.
Oh, definitely. That just spurred my mind into how they really do connect in my life. Because if I'm trying to look at something new, just on the basis of a theatre maker, if you look at just that, if you're looking at trying to produce something that has artistic value, that's going to be worthwhile watching for a specific audience, then you're inventing whatever that is and pursuing that. You need to pursue it, yet that's just one design out of or invention, if you wish, out of however many you'd pursue over your career. And by all means, for sure, I've looked at that and I still look at that. For me, improv is vast. It's not just within this little confine of what no one will really be able to define what improv comedy really is. But for example, just to make it clear, I want to create a production within Butoh, which is an improvised dance form. I want to look at the use of playback theatre with certain audiences. Pursuing these sorts of interests, which by all means says that they're both, or they can at least be both comedic as well. So it's still improv comedy, but you know, it's looking at pursuing that new. On less new, I guess, because playback's extremely old, but it's looking at where the new part of that is looking at where it would go. Looking at all these lines of interest, I suppose that's how they really connect for me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I have a little baby, you know, and he's almost 2, and I'm trying to like watch him to learn about the human condition. You know what I mean? Like to see the way he, and you know, interacts with stuff in a like pure way. And it occurred to me, and I've told this to some students of mine, that we always know what we want to do, like as a little kid. Now, I know that, you know, there's lots of little kids that are like, I want to be a fireman, or like, I want to fight dragons. And you're like, okay, sure. These are things that are unusual. Hey, you want to be a fireman, please. By all means, we need someone to save us. Get running. But like all sorts of different stuff, like you can totally look at it and try to find like the parts of it. So like the fact that you opened up with, you know, the acting and the inventing and how those are similar, like wouldn't that be an interesting thing? Like I look forward to now when my son eventually tells me something that he wants to be, I'll be like, okay, what's that? Like what does that mean? What is that? What are the parts of that that could lead to actually what he does? Like, you know, there's so many people out there, and like I teach improv 101, a lot. And so there's people who are like looking for something. They don't know what they want to do. They're not sure, you know, what they should be. And sometimes when you get to a certain point in adulthood, you kind of feel, and you don't know exactly what you want to do, you feel like, oh man, ugh. But it's like, no, you know, it's in there. You're just covering it up. So I think it's great that you have this memory of, you know, what you wanted to be. And it's really so, like, it just says so much about you.
I was a few things I was thinking then, but one thing that popped up is the two childhood professions. They're the same, aren't they, if you think about it? Fighting off a dragon and being a firefighter.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Frankly, I forget what the other point was now, but yeah.
You know what's funny? I'm glad that you connected those ideas. It's like such a great like improv brain thing that happened for you, because like, well, that's another thing. Like when I'm teaching, I'll try to connect ideas, you know, to help new students figure out like game moves. Like, so like I play games with them so that their brains start connecting ideas, so that it's like, yeah, the first beat is he's a fireman, but by the third beat, he's fighting off dragons, and they're the same. But they're a heightened version of one of them. So, oh, funny. So cool.
Exactly.
So what point happened? Oh, so the reason why I asked you about the comedy that you watched on television, which is very interesting that you're watching Laurel and Hardy and Chaplin and stuff on television, go British television. But like, I also watched a lot of weird television because when I was growing up, like cable got invented. And then HBO was a thing, and they'd had all this stand-up on it. So I remember as a little kid going into a TV room where my parents weren't looking and watching, like, George Carlin. And, like, that's not appropriate for children, but I still watched it. So I was like, oh, no. Did you also do that? And also, should I let my child randomly watch comedy that he shouldn't watch? That's hard to tell. But it's cool that's what you like, watch. Watched television and like watched the comedy, and it like helped buoy your interest in it. When did you start performing?
My first memory of performing is in junior school. So I would have been somewhere between 7 and 9, I suppose, on this performance. I can't remember what year I was in. I remember this because I got a laugh from the audience. So it was a simple line about what I wanted from Santa Claus. And I remember the line I said, that I wanted the game Mastermind. And as a kid saying that, it got a laugh. I'm not sure if Americans know what that game is, but...
Tell me what the game is.
It's a long plastic board where someone with a little shield will cover 4 coloured pins that you put in, and then the person has to guess what these 4 colours are by trial and error.
So it's a lot of hard work that a kid is unlikely to really want to do.
yeah. But I'm sure I loved that game as a kid as well. I don't know why. I don't know why. And there's a little black and white color code to say, you got one correct, exactly. You got a color correct, etc. on the little side. So if you've not played it, I do recommend playing it. It's a good game. As a kid, actually, that's a fairly valid point. I did like games in general. I went through a phase of card games, but I guess everything's in fads. I forced my family at quite a late age, teenage age, I think it would have been, to play a Friday night game night. And I have an older sister and older brother. They clearly don't want to be staying in on a Friday night playing games with their little brother, but it was forced upon them, and we played various games. There's my mum still has the games cupboard full of all sorts of things. There's still a few good games in there. I can't really recall what we would have played all those times, because nowadays I would only play a couple of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think every time I go home and visit my mom, we play Scrabble because she's real smart and she likes to win. And I like to let her win. And by let her win, I mean lose. I mean lose because she's way smarter than me. But yeah, I mean, it's games are, table games especially, are such a like great way to connect people. I know a few friends here in town that like go to like a games meetup, like where it's like, you know, people looking to make friends, and there's like a place, there's some restaurant or somewhere where they just let them use tables and they set up games and then people show up and they like make new friends. And I was like, oh, that's fun. Look at you. That's so cool. Like, what a fun. I love it when there's like a very like niche specific thing that like people connect around. Like, that's actually one of the reasons why I love improv as well. Is because, like, once you know, I love my 101 classes, and that sometimes people stick around and some people don't. Sometimes they don't. But once you get to the, like, a little bit, like, once you accept, okay, I'm going to hang out here a lot, and then you start having, you know, sort of making friends and getting in the community and stuff, I love that. I just love the idea of a person, you know, being like, oh, what am I going to do? Because adult friendship can be hard, you know? And then, but they take a chance, and then they go find a class, and it totally connects. Yeah. That being said, I would totally want to get tons of board games to play with my child now, because you're right. It's super smart and fun and exciting.
As a kid, though, I must say this is probably why I don't really continue that habit as an adult. I just enjoy cheating. Scrabble, I just put any word down that I assume is a word, then go, oh, we'll look it up in a dictionary. And that sort of habit would happen. But I guess it's about that connection. It's about being playful. So there is always an element of cheating. There's a wonderful card game which is literally called Cheat, where the objective is you get away with cheating.
That's so funny. I like the idea too, that like your entire family was just like watching you cheat and letting you cheat. They're like, meh, all right. Are you the youngest?
Yes. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. But on the connection with improv, totally. What's my thinking? Yeah. So it's all about cooperation. So all these games that were competitive, I wouldn't really have much of an interest in, because I just wanted to play around and enjoy people. So nowadays, all the games I play are based around just playing with people in general, which makes sense with improv, right? And as you say, improv is all about connecting with people, and all these games do connect, including even if you're playing a Chinese checkers, a competitive game, but if you just larking around and enjoying each other, like for example I work with, well, I have worked with and still do in part with adults with learning disabilities, and there's obviously other terminologies we can use. However, if we play pool, like a few days ago I was playing pool, the rules didn't exist of pool. We're just hitting balls and trying to get them in the pocket, you know. It's just that cooperation. It's about playing the game that exists rather than the one that is prescribed for you, which is very poignant when you talk about playing with your kids. Many years ago, when I was in Cardiff in Wales, I would walk to Cardiff Bay, sit around and read about play in general, but I would constantly get distracted because I'm in a public space with parents playing, or rather not playing, with their child. And in Cardiff, there's the Wales Millennium Centre, which has this very public small stage where they sometimes put some free performance on. And that's a wonderful little shiny play area for a kid to go to. And the amount of adults, parents that I would see make sure their kid did not get on that stage is just so ridiculous. Why don't you let your kid get up there and dance or something, or whatever they're going to do? And all these, I call them play cues, right? How many play cues do parents miss? And the answer is most of them, just because parents are generally not in tune with the idea of playing. Not always true. I haven't looked into an actual figure of that, but
It is a smart idea, though, because I think you're right. It's kind of like, you know, I even talk about this with students, too, the idea that, like, improv is hard when you first start because your brain is literally not programmed for playing. Like, you've been told, okay, you're an adult now. Figure out the tough stuff. And maybe if you've gone through enough, you've figured out some of the tough stuff. And that kind of like, you know, throws some barnacles on you. Makes you a little bit, you know, it's less easy to see through and enjoy when you're like, you know, bumbling around trying to figure out the adult parts of your life. Or something that I'm finding personally as I'm getting older is that I'm getting a little bit more anxious. Like, I was a fearless child. I would walk into anywhere. Like, when I was a kid, my mom was very political, and she would bring me to, like, protests and picket lines and stuff. And she loved it because I was an outspoken little child that would walk up to every crowd and just be like, "Hi, how's it going? Are you going to vote for so-and-so? Because I would, if I could vote, you know, I would just do all sorts of insanity." And now these days I catch myself being like, I don't know, nervous to talk to a store clerk. It's like, who cares? Talk to this human being. But that's what happens. You know, you get a little bit older and it like kind of makes it a little bit harder to communicate. And I wonder, you know, totally, it would be awesome if like parents could take an improv class just to open themselves up to play with their child.
Ooh. Wow, that sounds really cool. What a childhood. Let's go protest. Wow. Yeah. I totally see what you're talking about. Yeah, to enable parents to engage would be ideal. And I'd rather text someone as now rather than phone them up if I want something.
Yeah,
that speaks a lot, doesn't it? Even as improvisers, we're still somehow stuck within this potential social construct that we have in life, of that you can't do X, Y, and Z. There was I had a youth improv group, and one of the guys was so keen on improv, but as soon as I tried to help him take more initiative in pushing that further, like maybe go to teach or produce some event, that's where he couldn't do it anymore, because he's fine getting on stage improvising, but to do that in public where it's just him trying to publicize an event or stand in front of people and teach them as himself, that's where he struggled. And this was a teenager, so it, even at that age there's something going on. So there's, unfortunately, that does speak of the limitations of improv, doesn't it? Really, you can't save the world, but you can save a certain amount.
Well, I think also, and it made me think when you mentioned earlier the idea of collaboration versus competition, that I think that it's important to acknowledge both sides. And perhaps it doesn't occur in your community, which is great if there's no competition. But to a certain extent, like I find now in Austin, where I'm living, there is a big stand-up comedy community, and that's a very competitive group. And then there's the improv community, which tends to be a bit sweeter to one another and allows for a lot of stuff. But there are times when things are going on or awards are being given out or whatever, when it becomes competitive, because naturally it kind of is. Like, we're all trying to get an audience. We're all competing for the same people that are going to watch stuff. I mean, I'm thankful that every person in Texas that ever was like, yeah, I'd go to an improv show, has moved to this town. But that doesn't mean that there isn't still, you know, only a few people, and you kind of have to be like, come to our theater. It's really great over here. You know, do you want to be here with us? Like, and I think it's just a matter of not denying competition, but rather reminding us of sort of the, I'm not going to say gentlemanly because I don't mean it in a gender specific way, but I mean like a kind way of doing competition, you know, like being respectable. You know, I'm going to compete with you. Yes, I would like this. You would like that. We're both working towards it, but I'm not going to be mean to you about it. I'm not going to be terrible. I'm not going to try to, you know, cheat or take away. I'm going to try to be honorable in my competitive nature. So I think being an improviser can actually help when you're doing things like, you know, going to auditions. I mean, I've gone to auditions and seen friends of mine where I was like, oh, that person's going to get it. And, you know, I'm not sabotaging myself, but at the same time, like, I acknowledge the competition. I know what's going on. And it's like, yeah, we're both actors in this small pool. And I know what's going to happen here. She's great. Maybe I'll get it. If I get it, great. Awesome. But I'm not like, I don't hate her. I don't know. I think there's a way to reconcile both.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose there's still an element of supporting one another, that can happen within competition anyway, because if you're selling slightly different things within yourself through acting or, through, the improv theatres that exist, there's still a level of support that's still still available. A good example that I believe is within the London community here. There's various amounts of theatres that are putting up shows, but they're still supporting one another in some way. They all have very, very distinct voices anyway, to theatres, to what they put up and how they go. How, I guess it's stylistic. Mm-hmm. They're all different. So they're selling something different, but they're all also supporting one another. You can see the same group go to various theatres as well. So there's something within that, although that kind of negates what I said a moment ago.
That's life. Tell me about when you first started doing improv. When was the first time you found an improv class and got involved?
So the way I got onto improv was that I was in university, and there was an improv and role play module on my second year of my undergrad, and I was doing media and performance, so I wanted to look at film acting at the time, but within a month of starting that course I realized probably not for me. However, I still went with it and still progressed. In the second year I could choose this module, so I tried to choose it, but the response I got was no, because they wanted drama students to do it, not media and performance students to do it. So bleep me out if you wish, but I said fuck you, I'll do it in independent study. So there's a lovely module called independent study. Perfect. So I went and did independent study, so I got a supervisor that was actually extremely experienced within improvisation, and I did that. What was lovely is that opened up the whole world of improvisation to me. So I started with, I had to do my own classes. So I essentially taught myself. I went to professional workshops in the UK. I started teaching whatever I learned as well for this module. So I was doing all that instantly. So I also went to try to phrase it properly. So I started with movement improvisation. I went to Andrew Morris, who does solo movement and text. So I was doing that, and I was doing solo scenes based off of John Stone's work. And I gathered some drama students, and I was using all these things that I was picking up and anything that had been in my life beforehand to really get across what improv was. So that's essentially how I started. But what was more phenomenal than that was why I stick with it, because from doing that, from all these experiences, it connected in my entire life. Before that, I was doing loads of these principles of improv in my life. Like a good example is someone when I was year nine, 13, 14, wanted to insult my mum try to essentially call her a prostitute. They asked me, how much is your mum? So I went home, asked my mum, how much are you for a person at school? She said they wouldn't be able to afford her. I went back and told them, you know.
your mum clearly is funny.
She answered my question. Yeah. and more than that is the lovely aspect of having odd behavior, weird behavior. So before even I went to university, I was in a stock room of Littlewoods, which is a clothing store that no longer physically exists in the UK. That was my first job. And I was in the stock room there. I would say something in a weird voice and I'd answer myself, basically straight manning myself in this stock room. So it's all these sorts of, these are just two prominent examples that come to my mind of why am I doing improv still? Because I don't really have anything else. If that was my life before I even started looking into improv, I'm pretty sure there's nothing more I need to be, I should really be looking into.
Yeah, it's like I was saying before, where it's like we are who we are and we just need to recognize it. Like we've known since we were 5 years old what we wanted to do. And, you know, sometimes it came out in a wild, you know, mythical story, but we finally can find a way to get to it. I really love the fact that your story includes someone telling you you couldn't do it, and then you were like, okay, I'm gonna totally reconfigure my entire university setup so that I can do this because you're dumb for saying I can't. Like, I love it. That you, like, fought for it from the first moment. That's so, like, so amazing.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah, I've never really thought of that aspect. It's just...
Are you kidding me?
I'm extremely stubborn. I've always known I'm extremely stubborn. So you someone saying that you can't, I'm like, well, I'm going to do it. It's pretty pointless.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. I had similar situations in my, like, theater university situation where, you know, the teacher would tell me that I couldn't do something and I'd go, okay, well, I'm going to. So reconcile yourself with the fact that that's what's going to happen. And then when I come back for the second meeting about how I'm going to do it, I'm going to present to you how I'm going to do it. Cool? Thanks. Like,
well, yeah, exactly.
Like, this is art. I want to do art my own way because that's what's happening. I'm the artist here. So interesting. So did you change your major entirely to essentially improv?
Well, you would say so if you saw what I did, but not on practicality. No, I just that was just one module out of what I was doing. However, there was also a student TV station which is unofficially connected to the university, and they were just starting out. Nothing really happened. They didn't really last long because of, I guess, politics of managing that. My idea was to put out a sketch comedy really quickly. So I wanted to create a full episode of sketches every week, which is stupid. But the problem was that it was such a small student TV station that there was hardly anyone managing to create content. I just wanted to create and make sure there's something out there that says the TV station exists.
How many times did you do it?
Not many. I did two actual sketch episodes and one improvised sketch episode, which is where we're coming to. However, the rest of them were pretty much improvised. On the day of filming, I'm like, yes, here's the idea of what we're filming. We go to this location and we just get on with it. So it was essentially mostly improvised. The first episode had more actual material than the other ones. Well, the second one, because there's only three episodes in total. But I did create other stuff as well. Like, there was really stupid idea where I just sit with someone and talk nonsense for a very long time. And we filmed that and tried to put that out. The reason I remember that one is it took me 9 hours to edit it down. And I got two episodes out of it. I think I got two episodes out of it. And there might have been either 15 or 30 minutes. I can't remember. They were really, really awful because I did not edit it down enough. Or probably because of other things as well. But one of the things is that I took so long editing, but it still wasn't enough. They need to be a lot shorter.
Man, that's something that I'm dealing with right now. I do a sketch show as well. And, you know, it's tough when you're writing, because when you write, well, I find from people that I work with and students that I've had, whenever I say this, people are like, what? Is they write too much. Like, they'll write, you know, 8 pages and it's like a minute a page. So you're like, no, we're not doing an 8-minute sketch because zero people are going to pay attention through 8 minutes. So let's try to make them shorter. But it's super hard sometimes to like capture the joke in 2 minutes. I mean, you really have to be attuned to that. And since I'm just slightly older than the generation that was like on YouTube from the very beginning, like, yeah, sure, I know everything about YouTube or whatever, but I'm a little bit older. Like, when it came out, I was already like an adult. So I was like, oh, what? How do you do that? So it's super hard to like tighten things up sometimes. You have this idea of a joke and you're like, but I need the 4 minutes, you know? But it's somehow, it can be very difficult to do it that quickly.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I've truly gone back to sketch after the moment. So I've just done general theatre and improv since then, and movement stuff. And yeah, I don't think I've gone back to having to tighten anything up like that. Sure. I devised a piece with a friend a couple of years ago, which was about hypocrisy. And it was, it was just two of us performing. So we used ourselves, and we were a two-headed hippo. And we called it Hippocrit. And that was nice. And so that was a devising process, which was lovely, because having done improv for so long, having a process which requires us to not just keep improvising was really good. Oddly enough, it's just I like process. There's lots of aspects of process which are wonderful, and finding a process which worked with the two of us, that's just joyful in its own right, you know. There's going back to somewhere near where we started, there's an aspect of improv which I don't know if you know Open Space Technologies.
No, I've never heard of it.
Okay, but that's a way of processing conversations, or one of many. It's a way of having a discussion on various topics. It's beautiful. It's really, really good. I'd recommend looking into it. So it's got rituals, it's got structure, but it's also got principles which you follow, and those are more important.
The rule of 2 feet. Way of performing?
No, it's just a way of discussing. There are theatre companies that use it as a way of rehearsing. So I can try and do my best to hit most points of what it is. So you open up a big circle. It's an official ritual of opening the ceremony of the open space, and it's introduced, the principles are introduced, and then you open the space to people that want to submit topics of discussion, and those are put in to time periods throughout the weekend. Generally, you do it over a two-day period, but I've done those over a lot shorter normally. So that happens, and it's put up into time slots. And then some of the principles are whenever it starts, it starts. Whoever turns up are the right people. There's also the rule of 2 feet, which there's a bee and a giraffe. Rule of 2 feet says, butterflies. Some people are just butterflies, so they go from one place to another place. And some of the best conversations will not happen in those. They happen at the bar later, or this butterfly might just be hanging around at the wall, and then they have the best conversation at the wall, not in one of these spaces. The giraffe is 2 feet, because if you're not in the conversation, you're not getting anything from the conversation. You're elsewhere already, so you might as well physically be elsewhere. So all these wonderful aspects of open space. That's not all of them. I can say that for sure. But but it's really wonderful, really beautiful, and it's just processing. It's just a way of processing, and all of that connects to improv massively.
Yeah. Yeah, super interesting. I feel like now that you described it, I feel like I've heard of similar things, but I don't know that I just didn't know the names. Fascinating. That's super great. Have you used this type of discussion like in the improv community? Like, is that how people, you know, deal with changes in the community, by having this kind of conversation, or is this style you've witnessed more in a corporate aspect?
No, I've got this from a theatre company that use it annually as a two-day event, and they do it. They've taught it to local communities and used it. And they are improvisers themselves, so they've done it within an improv community as well. So I've attended their one many times, and I've attended other people's version of it a few times as well. So I've gone to improv ones a few times. The first time I went was just for theatre in general, when I was young and just starting in the acting world. I went to just resolve any basic issues that I had that everyone else would be really fed up of. So I've gone to that. What I have used I've used another system within a show, which is called Process Works, and that's beautiful. I actually stole it from the same people. So there's lots of different, there's lots of wonderful things out there, and some of these things are based around process-oriented psychology, which I haven't correlated what they are together. I haven't got the, well, no, it's not correlation, but I haven't got the link of how they go specifically together, because I haven't done the reading of process-oriented psychology. But that's where it comes from, because that's where I found out it comes from. So lots of wonderful connections. I say this because I'm doing a lot of research at the moment. So it's looking
at books on
terminology,
improv, right?
Yeah, I've got one out which is about teaching improv to university students, and I was working on a second one last year about the theoretical background, or theoretical backing rather, of improv comedy for autistic people. However, that's on hold because I've just started a major three-year research project on that topic. So I'm practically going to be looking at it in a very formalized research system.
Wow.
Yeah,
awesome.
So very exciting. Very exciting.
But you're like a research scientist, but in improv.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's good. So the point I was making is that who would have known that there's this official title for something that this theatre company picked up one day? It's an official background to where it comes from and what it is. So how many other things out there are actually improvisation but under different terminology?
Oh, by the argument of I was making earlier of three beats, anything.
Yeah.
It could be the first or second beat of any idea. Plus, improv is everything, right? Like, when I go to the grocery store and I, like, happen to speak to a grandmother with her child because I have my child with me, that conversation, improv. Like, every little bit of it. That's why I like it, because the more I can... I think it's important for people to connect. We were talking earlier about technology and how it can be difficult and how it can make us feel separated. You were talking about how you prefer to text than phone, and me too, 1,000%. And it's just because it creates a barrier. It helps us be separate. And the more separate we are, the harder it can be for us to understand each other. But the more we find opportunities to connect, whether it be talking to strangers in the grocery store, or making friends, you know, at a museum, if you're both looking at the same painting. I mean, you have similar interests, talk about it. Or going to an improv class. Super interesting topics we've had in this conversation. Wow. You're so smart.
Thank you. I wouldn't say so myself. It is persistent. That stubbornness again.
Yeah, stubbornness, persistent, quite intelligent, clearly modest. I hear it. I get it. So tell me, like, what is your, like, what's your situation? Like, you just said that you're going to be going and working with groups to study improv with autistic communities. But what other improv are you doing? Like, are you actively doing shows right now? Are you teaching? What's your current in the world improv life?
So at the moment, I teach improv in various places around the UK. And when I have the opportunity and time, I try and tour around Europe. Basically, I will teach improv wherever I can, is the answer. As for performances, I have a theatre company with this person I spoke about earlier. However, it's kind of on hold, but not on hold. It's in its own process. So the idea with that theatre company is to run productions in various forms of improvisation. There's not one form in my mind of improv. There's many forms, including within that little square box of improv comedy, as well as the outside vastness of what it can be. So looking at creating a full show, a butto show, a commedia dell'arte show, playback theatre show, and then maybe returning to productions I've done in the past, which in a more constructed theatrical output, I guess. So that's kind of where that stream is with performance, and I'll perform improv if someone asks me to, and if there's value to it. I feel like I know where I'm looking to go, and also if the other side of it, where like a lot of people obviously are doing regular weekly shows, for me, I'm improv is my career, it's my job, it's my life. So doing weekly stuff has little value for me at the moment. That might change, you know, as life is improv, life is process. But that's where that is. I will perform.
Like, you're focused on the performance with your friend, where you like have very specific goals, where you're like, I want to do this kind of show, I want to learn that, and it's like it feeds back into, you know, you clearly want to soak up as much information as you can, right? Like, you were in a program and they were like, you can't have this particular information. And you were like, haha, but I can. So, and like, even now when you talk about the books that you wrote, like you're receiving information, you're soaking it all up, and then you're communicating it back out to the world, which I really enjoy. Why not use the time that you're going to perform to not only work with a trusted friend, but also to, you know, explore different styles? I mean, you're right. There are so many people that just do, you know, a standard improv show once a week. They're not really putting much effort into it. It's kind of, and I know you didn't say that, that's what I'm saying, but you know, like there's a lot of going through the motions. There's a lot of like, yeah, let's just do a montage, and you're like, great, but what is that accomplishing? What is that teaching? What is that doing? And I love the idea of all the performances you guys have on the roster. they're like, okay, first we're going to work on this and then we're going to work on that. Like, why not? Better to be focused and, you know, dive into the things that you're excited as opposed to, I mean, if you're dedicated the way you clearly are, might as well.
Yeah, there's one show I did try it out, which is the other point I was kind of alluding to. I tried out a form. Do you know Catch Impro?
No.
I think it originated in France. So it's based on boxing. So they'd have two improvisers in a team competing against another two, and there's a referee, and there's a bunch of rules and rules and rules and rules and such. It's wonderful. I love it. But I thought, why didn't I just use clowns? So I got two clowns, and we changed this form into a clown show, basically. And it was amazing. It was so amazing. So this was in Bristol, and a fond memory I have of this show is I got the now he's the artistic director of Bristol Improv Theatre. I don't think anyone had an official title back then for the Bristol Improv Theatre, but that's a good thing. Note for people listening, look them up. It's a great place. But Andy O from Bristol Improv Theatre, I got him on stage, and one of the games we were playing is a clown game where the clowns have to steal money from this hospital waiting room. And Andy had to be the receptionist, but his distraction was to read something. So I asked if anyone in the audience had anything. No one had anything apart from someone with a tin of sweet corn. So we gave him this tin of sweet corn to read. But he was already so far gone with laughter that he could hardly read this thing. And the clowns just kept taking the money instantly. It was such a beautiful and wonderful moment. This guy just in hysterics on stage because he can't cope with how much fun he's having. And these clowns just easily getting it. It's a wonderful, wonderful moment. So I'd like to return to that one and create that as a full production where it has more to it than the clowns performing. There's something else there which is fundamental to what the theatre is, as well as then having the raucous nature of clowns in it. I'd like to do that, and I'm sure it will happen at some point. What was my other point? I did have another point, but once more.
I like the idea of the clowns because there's something beautiful about, you know, movement and silence and creating comedy just with the physical. You know what I mean? Like getting the joy of that moment you're describing is like, you know, everybody's totally part of it. And it brings me back, and I don't know if I'm having my own little personal epiphany about this or something, but it like brings me back to how the words can hold you back.
Yes, like, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, so true. So true. I've been doing clown for a long time. I was part of Damien Dennett's company Clowns in Cardiff many years ago. And we would work with the physical, obviously, but having that capacity to then speak would alter things, it would change things. And there was one moment, actually in the show I was talking about with the Catch Clowns, where someone chose to start speaking, and it didn't work. So I just I asked the audience if they wanted to see it again, and we replayed it with no words, and it was funny again. You know, so it's totally true that words do complicate. And one of the things when I'm teaching is I try and get rid of words so people can not worry about that and know what truly is meaningful, and that can really work. Tell me if I'm just waffling on too much. You know, I feel like I'm waffling on too much, going from one topic to another topic. But never mind, I'm keen to keep going.
Yeah, no, you're interesting. Please tell me more things.
Thank you. Recently, I had some students do a class with me where the end goal was to to create a theatre collectively, but all the scenes were just solo. So the idea behind it is to create a full theatre piece. It's short, by all means, a short theatre piece, and that has to come through from, not from the words at all. It's from all the other aspects. All the you can break down. You can break down everything in however way, whatever way you wish to, and through the system I have with those guys, we broke it down, and none of it was really. Actually, it's not true, but it's about getting past meaning, right? Past the words, the linguistic meaning, because whatever we do, all this going philosophical, whatever we do, is someone else has to interpret it anyway. So what you mean in your head doesn't really mean that's what's coming out of your mouth, and then it's going to someone else's ear, and they have to interpret what you're saying anyway. So it's how many times have you said something, realized that's not quite what you meant, and then someone's reflected something else that was not what you meant either. You know,
a thousand times, millions.
Exactly. So we have to get past words. We have to get past language to actually get somewhere.
Yeah, totally. I love to hear about the work that you do with your students, and you just seem like you're so excited to share in the experience of improv, and that's really wonderful. What got you to the point? What got you to the point to decide to teach? You started out, you know, studying improv, and I guess you taught right away. You said you taught right away when you started studying it. What was the impetus for that? I mean, you wanted to perform, you wanted to create stuff, but why? What made you want to teach other people?
Well, there was an obligation to teach initially, because in order to do that module, independent studies, the lecturer said you have to teach. So that's where it happened. And because I loved improv, I started an improv group at the university. So in order for that to happen, I needed to teach those people. And then after, in 2007, I went to America and taught improv and comedy to autistic kids from a range of ages, and up to 25, I believe. And through that experience, obviously, it makes sense that I'm doing what I'm doing now is connected to that, because that was amazing. So I was teaching there. So in reality, I've been teaching improv for quite a long time. And it's based on an obligation, although I don't think I would have saw it as an obligation then. It was getting to getting people to do stuff, and that was quite enjoyable, really, looking at playing with other people's ideas and interpreting them in a different way. I remember the concept, what was I trying to do? Just getting people not to be able to think. So I forced them to do about five things at once while I was trying to have a conversation, which included pulling ropes and I don't even remember what else. It was loads of different things all at once where I had to do and just have a conversation. This was in year one of trying to communicate improv to others. And it's just interesting that whatever you look to do, you can always explore it as from whoever you are, right? So this is a key thing. Teachers are great and extremely valuable, but so are people that know nothing about improv. The most insightful people are people that know nothing, or people that have been teaching for a while, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the people who've been teaching for a while, I feel like, you know, I think there is like an ebb and a flow to knowing, like knowing in a large capital K, you know, like, because I think that you, especially as we get older, you know, you move through knowing what you're doing. You know, you started as a baby, you don't know, you learn some stuff, you get older. And this is kind of, okay, so I have this 18-year theory. Sorry, audience, you're hearing it again. So this is my 18-year theory. I think we become new people every 18 years. And not like brand new people, but we have a new chance to start again at the bottom and to like learn again. So like when you're born, you're a baby, you don't know anything, you're figuring it out. Clear. It's clear where that you are the, you know, newest thing you're learning. When you become 18, they tell you, okay, you're an adult now, you can go to college. And then you're like, what? And nobody knows what they're doing, right? You go off to the next part of your life and you're like, what? What is this? I don't know. And you figure it out. And you figure out how to be an adult again. You figure out how to live on your own. You're doing stuff. And then eventually you're cooking. You're figuring it out. You're doing stuff. I think you get to 36, you know, the next rung of 18, and you drop again. You're like, wait, who am I? What is going on? There's a, you know, the idea of the quote unquote midlife crisis happening just in this area. People get divorced. They buy sports cars to fill a hole and whatever. They start taking improv classes, whatever people do to make themselves feel better. But this is a new time. You can start again. You are fresh again. You can try to become a new person, because like 36-year-old you is different than 8-year-old you. So you've got to start anew. And I feel like this is born out of the what you're talking about with reference to improv students. The person who has been, who starts off, of course they don't understand the like rules, but they have this amazing view into it as a new, like they're telling you what they see through their brand new eyes. And you're like, oh yes, I forgot about that. That's so amazing. But then you're right. People who have been teaching for a long time, maybe 18, 20 years, who knows, they broke through. They broke through, were like, I don't know anything, and then had to teach themselves again or see things in a new way, and it helps them communicate it further. I just really think that, like, that's something that happens. So whenever I feel confident about my own teaching ability and knowledge, but when I hit a wall and I don't know what's going on, I'm like, it's okay. This is a natural part of life. Sometimes you know, and sometimes you don't. And you just got to learn, keep learning, soaking it all up. It's one of my theories about accepting the world and the ebbs and flows of being involved in it, and also sticking with stuff, you know?
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Wow. Life is for learning. So that has to be something in that, right? There's always something out there that you can learn. There's always something more to whatever you're doing. For sure. Yeah, I agree.
Plus, there's also like a certain, like, there's a part of your life where you kind of feel like you don't, like, you're like, who am I? And that's, again, what I think leads to things like the midlife crisis. People are like, oh no, I'm 36. What does that mean? And it doesn't mean anything. It's just keep going. Try to keep living. It's a helpful tool. But at the same time, like, yeah, maybe you aren't, because you're not the same person. You know what I mean? Like, think of university you. Like, you're not that guy. I'm not the girl that went to my college. You know, like, I've grown up. I've had different experiences. I've done different stuff. And, like, I'm in, like, for instance, I'm 40 right now. So I'm 4 years in. And I'm kind of in a weird spot. Like, I'm like, what am I doing? I'm not sure. What's happening? Let's focus on this. Let's dig deep to the projects that I'm working on. But, you know, I'm kind of going through the motions trying to figure out what is the next path for what I'm going to do. But without my theory of 18 years, I would be mad at myself. I'd be like, you're 40 years old, Amy. What are you doing? You can't figure out what you're going to do with your life? God. But I try to be kind to myself the way I would be kind to other people. If I spoke to a person and they said, oh man, I'm hitting a wall creatively, I'd be like, it's okay. Just keep moving through, fill up with some exciting things that inspire you, and then it'll break through. It'll, you know, the chick will hatch from the egg. It's okay. Like, so I try to be as kind to myself as I try to be to other people. And I think it helps. It helps open yourself up to, you know, what the next bit is. And I also love the fact that I get to talk to people like you who have, you know, different journeys and different experiences, so I can try to soak up a little of what you've learned. Like, and I don't know, it's a cool process, life. I like it.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Gosh, yeah. I think my turnaround is a lot quicker than 18 years. I remember being 17, standing on this little brick wall in college, just with the air blasting through me, going, "Who am I? What is my life?" And I was 17 doing that. And I go through all the quick processes of questioning, perhaps. I don't know.
No, you're probably right. I'm sure there's a you know, a few years here and there. It's different for everybody. But for me, it's just sort of like I try to tell people the theory when I feel like they're hard on themselves. Or in this case, when I was inspired by the idea of education and reinventing yourself. But, you know, it's like, give yourself a, you know, for instance, in my own example, I'm four years into my third cycle. Would you be mad at a 4 year old for not like knowing what they want to go to college for? No. You wouldn't be like, come on, Timmy, what is it going to be? Economics or business? What's the decision? Like, you're not mad at them, right? So I'm not mad at me because I'm not really sure what I'm doing. I'm going to continue to do improv, I'm going to continue to do this. But it's like, you got to continue, you got to be cool with it. And in your example, you know, you got to be open to the whatever the lessons are around you. It's been really great talking to you.
Likewise, this has been an amazing conversation.
Yeah, totally. You're so smart. My notes are just filled with all sorts of like cool things I get to look up after. I'm like, what's this thing? Oh my, what, open space? Oh, I'm into it. Like, there's just so many cool things. Plus, you know, you got books on improv that you're working on, which is so great. People can read your books to know, you know, get into your head a little bit. Cool. I'm really excited for all your future projects, and everything that's going on with you.
Me too. I'm not sure what's going to happen. So that's the exciting part of basically what you're just saying. Here's a step in a process that's happening now.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.